You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Tuesday, August 31st, 2021, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb, and coming up on today's episode, we talk about another Orioles loss as they finally made their way back to Toronto at the Rogers Centre for the first time since 2019, and they were greeted by two Vladdy Guerrero Jr. home runs and a 7-3 loss to the Blue Jays. We will give you the five things you need to know from the O's loss on Monday night. Then later in the pod, we will continue to take a look at the Orioles draft class from this year. And today we talk about the 14th round pick Daniel Lloyd, the right-handed pitcher out of South Carolina. And Chris Phillips is going to join the podcast. He is the host of the Spurs Up Show, a podcast that covers all things South Carolina Gamecocks athletics, including the baseball team very closely. And he talks to us about Daniel Lloyd, his role in the South Carolina bullpen, his stuff on the mound, and what he sees him being able to do at the next level. And then we will finish up and get you ready for tonight's game two between the Orioles and the Blue Jays. But that is all coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit RockAuto.com and tell them Locked On Orioles sent you. So the Orioles lose another one on Monday night by a score of 7-3 at the Rogers Centre in Toronto. Again, the first time they've been there since 2019, because the last 2 years the Blue Jays have had to play in Buffalo due to the borders being closed and the COVID-19 pandemic. But the Orioles head back there with a loss on Monday night, falling 7-3. Orioles now 40-90 on the season, just 32 games to go, and the Orioles have hit the 90-loss mark. And I'm here to give you the five things you need to know from the Orioles 7-3 loss to the Blue Jays. And the first thing you need to know is that Chris Ellis, in his second start with the Orioles, was, I gotta say, pretty good for the O's and probably lasted longer in this game than even Brandon Hyde thought he would. Ellis, in his second start with the Orioles after they claimed him off waivers from the Rays a couple of weeks ago, goes 4 2/3 innings, allowing just one run on two hits. He struck out two, he walked one, and the only run he allowed was a solo home run hit by Vlad Guerrero Jr. to lead off the fourth inning. That was it. He left after a two-out walk to the number nine hitter, Jerod Dyson, in the fifth inning, and Dylan Tate came in and got that final out of the fifth to keep it at just the one run allowed by Ellis. And again, you know, it wasn't big strikeout numbers, just the two Ks, but you know, he was throwing strikes, and it was interesting to see his pitch mix. He threw 69 pitches on the day, 32 of them fastballs, that's about 46% of the time, 21 sliders, 12 curveballs, and he dropped in four changeups as well. And I think the interesting part about that is the changeup is kind of the pitch when you watch Chris Ellis throw. That's the pitch that kind of really just, you know, surprises you a bit and makes you think maybe he should throw this more. It's got some good good solid break, you know, down and away from the left-handed hitters, but only threw it four times, and he didn't throw it much either in his first start last week against the Angels. And, you know, overall in terms of whiffs, he got seven swings and misses on 69 pitches, did get one on that changeup, four on the slider, which seems to be his best pitch, and then two on the fastball. But the slider was really, really working for him. Got the four whiffs. He was throwing it in the zone well. Overall, that pitch was really, really good for Ellis and helped him get some strikeouts. But, you know, he was getting some weak contact. He was also getting some hard contact that was just kind of hit to some Orioles fielders on the day on Monday night. And he did get a little lucky. It wasn't super dominant. But, you know, for a guy who, you know, we figured would go 3-4 innings every time he started, to get 4 2/3 out of him. And, you know, there was the walk to Jerod Dyson that I mentioned with two outs in the fifth where he was pulled. It was a 3-2 curveball that a lot of umpires would have called strike three. It looked like it landed on the black on the outside corner. Umpire called it ball four. It could have been a nice, clean five innings with three strikeouts for Ellis in just the one run. He was, you know, inches away, maybe a different umpire from that happening as well. And, you know, it's tough to get around Vladdy Guerrero Jr. twice. He, you know, gives up the homer, but nobody on base. It's a solo home run, and he got through it. And I was impressed by Ellis, and I'd like to see him start again and see if the Orioles can stretch him out more, because, you know, he was turned into a reliever in the Cardinals system in 2019, and then he's been mostly a reliever since then. But, you know, before 2019, he was in, you know, every fifth day starting pitcher for, you know, 4 or 5 years in the minor leagues. So, you know, this is something he has done a lot in his career and something I think he can still do at the major league level. Second thing you need to know from the game is that Cedric Mullins did not play in this one for the Orioles until the ninth inning. Brandon Hyde giving him the day off in this one and instead starting Ryan McKenna in center field, who was actually recalled back up to the big leagues by the Orioles on Monday afternoon. And that was a part of two moves that the O's made on Monday. Remember, back on Sunday, the Orioles made two moves to send Spencer Watkins and Paul Fry back down to AAA Norfolk. We talked about the repercussions of those moves on yesterday's episode, so make sure to go listen back to that one. But we figured that the O's, since they sent two pitchers down, were going to call two pitchers up on Monday to replace them. But it was only one pitcher and one position player. Ryan McKenna had continued to just kill it offensively when he was sent back down to AAA Norfolk. He gets the recall, and you know, it gives the Orioles a little more outfield depth. But you know, it didn't end great for McKenna. He goes 0-for-3 with three strikeouts on the day against the Toronto starter Robbie Ray, and he was actually pulled in favor of Mullins in the ninth inning. The Orioles got an RBI single from Pedro Severino in the ninth. They got two runners on with two outs, trailing 7-3. They had the tying run on deck, and Brandon Hyde went to Cedric Mullins as a pinch hitter for McKenna, and then Jordan Romano struck out Mullins on a 3-2 high fastball to end the game there. But McKenna, you know, did get pulled in favor of Mullins. And then, of course, the other move that the Orioles made was the right-handed pitcher Zach Birdie was called up to the Orioles from AAA for the first time. Of course, Birdie was claimed off waivers from the Chicago White Sox a couple of weeks ago. Orioles had sent him directly to AAA, but he got the call-up on Monday. Did not pitch in Monday night's game, so he has yet to make his Orioles debut, but a hard-throwing right-hander, former first-round pick of the White Sox. We had Herb Lawrence, the host of Locked On White Sox, on this podcast a couple of weeks ago to talk about Birdie, his career with the White Sox. Go back and listen to that one for more information on Zach Birdie, but we should see him make his Orioles debut in the next day or two. Third thing you need to know from the game is that Ryan Mountcastle just stayed red-hot for the Orioles. I mean, Mountcastle is making kind of a late push to win AL Rookie of the Year, and I'm not sure it's going to happen. There's some good candidates ahead of him, but he has been fantastic, especially in this entire month of August, as today will be his, you know, last chance to add on to those August stats. Mountcastle was really the only guy who did it at all offensively for the Orioles. There were only two players for the O's on Monday who were on base more than once, and Mountcastle was one of them. He went 2-for-3 with a home run, two RBIs, a walk, and two runs scored on the day. He got the scoring started in the top of the first inning, second batter of the game. He ropes a solo home run to left field off of Robbie Ray to give the Orioles a 1-0 lead. He had a single later in the game, a walk. He scored the run the Orioles scored in the ninth inning on the Pedro Severino RBI single. He had an RBI single of his own, RBI infield single in the sixth inning that gave the Orioles a 2-1 lead at that time, and he just continues to swing the bat well for the Orioles. Fourth thing you need to know is that the Orioles, you know, really lost this game. You know, a lot of it was because they didn't get much offensive production. Ray was great for the Blue Jays, struck out 10 batters, allowed just two runs over seven innings. But also the fact that, you know, the Orioles, the first two relievers that they used after Chris Ellis really just didn't help them out at all, and frankly kind of had blow-up outings, both of them, in this one. The first was Dylan Tate, who came in the fifth inning with two outs, the runner on first after the walk by Ellis, got the Orioles out of the inning and kept them at a 1-1 tie, but came back out there in the sixth and just fell apart. He only recorded one out in the sixth inning before he was pulled, ended up getting charged with three runs on three hits, no strikeouts, and a walk on the day. It bumped his ERA to 4.58 on the season. And Tate was just not nearly as effective as we have seen him at times this year. It was kind of a tough watch for Dylan Tate on Monday night. He was in the middle of the plate a lot. The fastball did not have nearly as much run as it usually does. And the slider that he likes to throw just didn't have the bite that we're used to seeing, and he didn't really throw it. And it seemed like, to me, for Dylan Tate, he did not have a feel of that changeup or that slider, because he threw 23 pitches, 20 of them were that sinking fastball. He threw just three sliders, no changeups, and you could basically tell that, you know, although the velocity was right there, it was about 96, 97, 98, right around where he's been this year, He had okay command of it, but the fact that he only threw three off-speeds out of 23 pitches, and he has good off-speed stuff, shows me he may not have had the feel for those secondary pitches, and that really hurt him in the game on Monday night. And then as he had to come out of the game with one out in the sixth, and you know it was already at that point 2-2, Marcus Duplan came in, and he couldn't really get guys out either. Duplan finished off the sixth. He worked two outs in the seventh. He was charged with three runs, this on just one hit, but he walked two batters, didn't strike anyone out, and he gave up the, kind of the big swing that put the game out of reach. Two on and two out in the seventh, hangs a curveball to Vladdy Guerrero Jr., who hit it out for home run number 38. It was a three-run shot and his second of the day that made it 7-2 in the seventh and kind of put the game away. And Duplan, who had been obviously really good so far this season, he just kind of had a blow-up outing. And shouts to Connor Green for finishing things out and retiring all four batters he faced to kind of keep it at seven runs to finish out the game for the Orioles. But Duplan and Tate just did not have it together for the Orioles in this one. And the fifth and final thing that you need to know from the Orioles 7-3 loss to the Blue Jays on Monday night is, you know, we mentioned that two players got on base twice for the Orioles. One was Ryan Mountcastle that we talked about, and the other was Kelvin Gutierrez, who, you know, I don't know what kind of player he is and how he maybe fits into the Orioles, not just the rest of this year, but beyond that. But he has some skills that are useful, and you can kind of see the reasons why the Orioles claimed him off waivers from the Royals, you know, and have sent him down to AAA and brought him back up again to give him another chance at the major league level. Gutierrez was 1-for-2 on the day. He had a single and a walk, and scored a run for the Orioles as well. He came around to score in the sixth inning on the Ryan Mountcastle RBI single that gave the O's the 2-1 lead. But, you know, it's again, he's not going to have a lot of power. He hit some singles. He's got a pretty good eye at the plate that allows him to get on base. Again, you know, a 526 OPS, just a 201 average on the season between Kansas City and Baltimore. It's not great offensive stats. There's a reason he's hitting ninth behind Jorge Mateo and Ryan McKenna in this lineup at this point. But you can see, you know, somewhat of a potential roster spot that he could fill in the future. And, you know, he has good batter's eye, and, you know, he plays a good third base. He scoops up everything that is hit over there to him at third. We know he can play second and short if he needs to, although we haven't seen much of it in an Orioles uniform. But I just wanted to shout him out because, again, you know, I don't know if the bat's ever going to really keep him at the major league level. He's never going to really be a major league starter. But, you know, at least in terms of being a bench infielder, a fourth infielder guy, utility guy who can play defense and get you on base a little bit, I think Gutierrez is an option. I don't know if he's the option. I don't know if he survives, you know, the 40-man roster crunch. You know, it's going to be a test for him this offseason with the Orioles. But I think he's going to at least finish this season with the organization, probably with a lot of time coming at the major league level, especially as the rosters expand to 28 players starting tomorrow. And I think the Orioles are going to give him a serious look at third base here in the final month of the season and then be able to kind of make a decision on Gutierrez. But that's how it went for the Orioles. They fall 7-3 to the Blue Jays on Monday night and lose game one of a three-game series in Toronto at the Rogers Center. But of course, now we go back down to the minor league level as we continue to look at the Orioles draft class from the 2021 MLB draft back in July. And today we're going to learn about the Orioles 14th round selection. That is the right-handed pitcher Daniel Lloyd out of the University of South Carolina. And joining us to talk about him is Chris Phillips. He is the host of the Spurs Up Show, podcast that covers all things South Carolina Gamecocks athletics, including Chris himself covers the Carolina baseball team pretty closely. And he joins the pod to talk about Daniel Lloyd, his role in the South Carolina bullpen, his stuff on the mound, and what he can bring to the Orioles. So that's all coming up next with Chris Phillips of the Spurs Up Show as we learn more about the Orioles' 14th round pick, the right-handed pitcher Daniel Lloyd. That's coming up after the break. So we'll get to our conversation about Orioles 14th round draft pick Daniel Lloyd in just a second, but first it's that time of year again, and all eyes are now turning to football as teams are back on the gridiron to start the football season. And as always, betonline.ag is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. Get all the updated odds, props, and contests, including online's biggest $500 million NFL mega contest and the world's largest $200,000 NFL survivor contest, open now at betonline.ag. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today, and you can receive a 100% welcome bonus. And be sure to take advantage of their opening day super promo. Make a bet on the opening night game between the Buccaneers and the Cowboys, and even if you lose, your wager will be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up and using the promo code NFL100. So when you're there also, make sure to use the promo code LOCKEDON. You can do it all at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. All right, so we welcome Chris Phillips into the podcast. He is the host of the Spurs Up Show. It is a podcast that covers all things South Carolina athletics, including the widely successful Gamecocks baseball team. And Chris, first of all, thank you so much for joining the pod.
Connor, appreciate you having me, man. It's a pleasure. And like I was telling you off air, man, it's great with just 10 days away from college football season. Our minds are all locked into that. Be able to talk college baseball and baseball as a whole, especially one of our own, one of our Gamecocks, one of our Yardcocks, if you will. It's a pleasure. So I appreciate you having me, Connor. Thanks so much.
Yeah, of course. And of course, as you mentioned, we have you on to talk about Daniel Lloyd, who was the Orioles' 14th round pick in the draft this year, pick number 407 overall out of South Carolina. Of course, a South Carolina native, ended up pitching three seasons for the Gamecocks before the Orioles took him in the 14th round. So I did want to focus mostly on his junior year here in 2021, because that was obviously his, you know, breakout year, which got him on the draft radars and got him picked by the Orioles in the 14th round. So he appears in 23 games, a 3.07 ERA. You know, he strikes out 42 batters in 41 innings. But I did want to ask about his role, because a lot of relievers who get picked are closers. But Lloyd only had two saves this year. So kind of what role exactly did he pitch in for the Gamecocks this year?
You know, I would just say, Connor, was a late relief role. That closer role, it was interesting. You know, Brett Carey, who was, you know, arguably the stopper of the year, was a guy that was pivotal in that Gamecocks bullpen. He started out back there, and his South kind of went throughout the season and kind of went through SEC play, and they struggled mightily on Friday nights, and they really weren't getting the most out of Brett Carey. You know, it's weird. South kind of, Connor, just wasn't in many situations where they needed a closer for whatever reason. So Brett Carey was actually thrust into a starting role, which he thrived, did very, very well. And of course, he was drafted also. But Danny was, you know, he was a late inning guy, of course. I always looked at him as a guy that was competing for the closer role all throughout his career. I thought he should have been the closer many times. But of course, when you look at Brett Carey, his body of work, hard to argue. But yeah, Danny was that late inning guy, that eighth inning guy that you could hand the ball to. But really, South kind of during his tenure there, you know, it was all about, again, I know we're going to get into this, which guy could they depend on consistently to throw strikes? I think ideally, Danny probably would have been the closer from day one, but again, he was a young pitcher, struggled, you know, like many others, struggled with, you know, issues with consistency and command, walking guys, you know, free base runners, and it's just something you can't have in a one or two run ball game, as you know. So Danny certainly, I mean, explosive stuff. It's crazy, Connor. We watch SEC baseball weekend after weekend, and we had the regionals here in Columbia, and it's crazy, man, watching this level of baseball now, because everybody that's coming out of the bullpen is throwing 95, 96, 97. I mean, I remember a time where guys throwing 95 was like, it was a rarity unless you were at the big league level. And even then it wasn't common. Now at the SEC level, everybody's doing that. But yeah, Danny was certainly a late inning guy, got his opportunities late in games to close out games, was also though could go long relief. I mean, there were definitely a couple of outings. He went two or three innings. I mean, I think of his performance and I think really what put him on the map for the draft. You know, he had a solid junior year, but that the regionals, the postseason in Columbia, you know, the game he had against Virginia in game one, and, you know, was the most consistent pitcher, I think, by far in that regional, and was my actually regional MVP for our show. So certainly was a late inning guy, but the closer situation, it was really interesting for the Gamecocks. Again, I don't feel like they really ever settled on one true closer. Again, how much of that is really Danny Lloyd's fault? I'm not sure. I think it was just a matter of how the season played out and the situation they were in and just doing everything they could to win ball games and get to an over 500 SEC record and get to the postseason. But no, Danny certainly, you know, has the stuff, has the makeup, has the moxie of that closer, that late inning guy. You know, it's crazy, Connor, just on a side note, you know, I know we're talking about his junior year, but this is a dude that was thrust into action as a true freshman. His true freshman year, I don't know if you know this name, Carmen Majinski, who was a first round pick by the Pittsburgh Pirates. He got hurt in that season. So South Carolina was down very bad in their pitching staff. And Danny was actually thrust in there to make some Friday night starts as a true freshman. So, I mean, he got thrown to the wolves immediately, but I think you saw that really hardened him as a pitcher as he went throughout his career. But again, Connor, certainly a late inning guy. That's the role he served for South Carolina. Again, I'm sure what the Orioles, the way they want to use him as well.
Yeah, and as baseball evolves, you know, the actual closer being a guy who pitches one inning in the ninth is less important now than it was 5, 10 years ago. Which helps out for him. And I did want to ask you kind of, you know, you talked a little bit about him being a starter. He did end up making eight starts, as you mentioned, in that freshman year in 2019. And, you know, the ERA by the end of the year, 9.51, he obviously had his struggles, but he still had good strikeout numbers that year. So I just did want to ask, you know, between that year of starting and, you know, you mentioned the long relief appearances, his last two appearances as a Gamecock were each three scoreless innings. Mm-hmm. So do you think he still has the stuff and maybe the length? If the Orioles looked at him for, you know, the rest of this season, maybe, and then this offseason, they thought, maybe we want to stretch him out. Do you think he could go back to a starter if they thought it was maybe the best thing for him?
Yeah, I mean, I don't question that he could. I mean, it's really, you know, Connor, the only difference is, and it's a mentality thing. I mean, listen, I've seen guys on South Gunna's staff. I've played with guys before myself, you know, playing college baseball. I mean, you see it every day in the game. It's really just a mentality thing. It comes down to some guys, for whatever reason, they're better out of the bullpen. They don't like knowing when they're going to pitch. They don't like being in a routine. Some guys, they need that to be successful. They need to be in a routine, know exactly when they're going to go, you know, time everything out. So, you know, if Danny's got the right mentality, which I think, you know, from knowing him and his family and everything else, I mean, I think he'd have no issue with that. And then physically, of course, getting your body ready. You know, I think if they wanted to at least try it and stretch him out, I have no doubt Danny Lloyd could be successful. You know, of course, he'd have to learn his body and how to manage his stuff because you can't go out there max effort every single pitch. And, you know, but you did see him, like you said, go in long relief, three innings each of his last two appearances. And like I said, he was phenomenal in that regional in Columbia. Like I said, he was my regional MVP. So if they wanted to stretch him out, I don't think it'd be a bad idea at all. But like I said, the stuff is there. Fastball slider combo. I mean, it's when it's on, it's unhittable, in my opinion. So it's one of the best you're going to see. So, you know, it's hard to project. Again, I think he's one of those guys in the middle. He's sort of shown flashes at both. And like you said, even in that freshman year, you know, being a young buck pitching in the SEC, you know, he was thrust into that. And I don't think he was really ready for what he took on. Not many would be, but the strikeout numbers were still there. If there's one consistent with Danny Lloyd, I think no matter what role he's in, the stuff is going to be there. Like I said, as long as he's in the zone, locating, throwing strikes, I mean, that slider, it's one of the best I've ever seen. I mean, it's nearly unhittable when he's commanding it and locating, has that bite that it normally has. It's a very, very lethal pitch. So yeah, I think if the Orioles want to try it, why not? What do you have to lose? And I think Danny's a guy that could make the adjustment and, you know, possibly flourish in a starter role.
Yeah. I do want to ask a little bit more about that stuff. Kind of, you know, you've talked fastball slider. Was there ever a point, you know, obviously as a starter, he may have used another pitch. And then what kind of, you know, at least with the fastball, what's the velo at? And then how often does he really go to that slider, you know, especially when he went into a full-time relief role?
Yeah. So I would say this, the biggest change there would be between being a starter and reliever, you know, as a reliever, Danny was 95, 96 for the fastball. I think you'd probably see him be more 92, 93. Like I said, you can't go max effort on every single pitch, but there's a lot of movement on it. Of course, the slider, he does use it often. Skylar Mead, the previous pitching coach for South Carolina, who actually just left to take the head coaching job at Troy, really, really good coach, really high on Coach Mead, but he actually incorporated with a lot of the Gamecocks pitchers a splitter. A lot of those guys are throwing a splitter and a cutter. So you'll see him feature that every now and then. I think the big thing for Danny is going to be developing that third pitch that he can really rely on. I mean, again, it was one of those situations where he was a fastball slider guy. Every now and then he's throwing a changeup, but I feel like it was more of a show me pitch. It wasn't a pitch he would use very, very often. And again, though, there's guys at the pro level that can live off of two pitches, but you better be able to locate, and those two pitches better be filthy. So, yeah, I think it would certainly help Danny's case to find a third pitch he can really rely on. Again, will it be the cutter, the great equalizer, in my opinion? Will it be a nice changeup, a circle change, what have you? So, but he goes to that slider often. There's no question. He'll start you with it. He'll get you on two strikes with it. Hey, he'll throw it behind in the count 2-0. So, I mean, he has no issue doing that. He's got a lot of confidence in it. Like I said, the great thing with Danny, too, is the fastball, it runs. It's not a flat fastball. Like I said, can bump it up there 95, 96. You know, if he's max efforting, you're going to see 95 a lot on the radar gun. So, a guy that the sky is the limit for him when it comes to stuff. The nastiness is there, that's for sure.
And then this is something we kind of talked about a little bit before we started recording, but just the command numbers. And you know, he did have some high walk numbers his first 2 years, and he got them down, which was huge for him in 2021. But he'd still probably like to get them down even more. And I know he did hit four batters as well, which sometimes it's tough to look at stats of hit batters and really, you know, factor it into anything. They can just be unlucky a lot of the times. But, you know, where did that play in, you know, when you look at times he struggled versus what the walk numbers were, and did they kind of coincide when he was struggling?
Yeah, I would certainly say 110%. I mean, more often than that, that's the same for most every pitcher, right? When you're walking guys and giving up free bases, and especially when you're in a conference like the SEC, where, I mean, you know, we make the joke at, you know, watching SEC baseball, like, this is watching double A ball. Like, that's literally the level you're watching. I mean, that's how good these guys are. But yeah, I mean, when he got in trouble, he was walking guys. There's no question. He was falling behind in the count. And even when you have that type of stuff, Connor, I mean, you know this, even if you're throwing 95, 96, if it's 2-0 and the batter knows it's coming again, an SEC hitter, he's going to hit it more often than not. So, you know, times when Danny Lloyd, in those last two appearances, by the way, you mentioned, you know, three innings pitched each of those individually. You know, he was ahead in the count. He was controlling the at-bats. He was dictating the at-bats, getting ahead, making hitters guess. Again, it's just like any other pitcher. When he fell behind, he would struggle more often. The good news is, Danny, though, is it's the struggles were even limited for him because the stuff is so good, he's able to navigate his way out of it. But the big thing for him, again, will be throwing strikes and throwing strikes consistently. And like I said, that's the case for most young pitchers, is just consistently doing it over and over and over and again and being able to hit your spots right. That's what separates the great ones from the good ones from the average ones, right? So certainly it coincided when he struggled in the zone or struggled throwing strikes. You saw his numbers inflate a little bit. And, you know, the hit batters, like I said, Danny, I will say, he's a guy who likes to pitch inside. He's not scared to go inside on a guy. Like I said, he tested out that cutter a little bit. He put that slider on the back foot, which I think is a positive. You want a guy that, you know, has some kahunas up there, is going to go after somebody, is not scared to go inside on a guy. But, yeah, I mean, I would say if you ask me one key to success for Danny Lloyd for his career, you know, it's tough to project, hey, is a guy going to be a big leaguer or what have you? But for him to have a lengthy professional baseball career and to have success, if he can simply fill up the zone, I think the stuff's good enough for him to make a run at possibly being one day a big league reliever for sure.
Yeah, we even saw him use his stuff to kind of get him out of a jam in his first pro appearance with the Delmarva Shorebirds. He ended up walking three batters in an inning and only gave up one run because he didn't give up a hit. And he still used the stuff back in the zone to kind of get him out of it. But the last thing I had for you, Chris, is I did want to ask, you know, I know you've covered this team, been around this team for a while and been around Danny and his family. And, you know, what is kind of the mentality and the person who Daniel Lloyd is, you know, a little bit on the mound? Cause it's, you know, you can be in your own head when you're a pitcher, but also off the mound, off the field as well.
He's a competitor. He's a bulldog. Like I said, I've been blessed enough to, over the years he was there, you know, it's really cool. The baseball community at South Carolina is really, really, really tight between the players and the coaches and the families and everything else. I have had the opportunity to get to know his dad and his brother and his mom and everything else. And Danny's just a bulldog. He's a competitor on and off the field. He wants to beat you in everything he does. And again, he's a guy that I project great success for. Again, he's kind of more to himself. He's not like that flashy sort of player, if you will, but he's a guy, man, shows up every day to the yard, just handles his business, whether it's a great outing, a poor outing, you're never going to see it on his face, which I think, of course, as a pitcher, you have to have that. He has a short memory, but man, just competitor. That's the thing that jumps out to me. That's why he was at the back end of the bullpen for South Carolina, because he's a guy you could have handed the baseball to. You could hand the baseball to each and every single time. And hey, would he have it that day? I don't know, but he's going to give you his best shit that day. He's going to give you his best effort possible, and he's going to go out there and compete and fight, whether he throws great or doesn't have his best stuff, whatever it is. He's going to go out there and compete and do his best to get the job done. So when I think of Danny Lloyd, again, that comes from his dad. His dad's an intense dude. You know, that entire family, I feel like they really get after it. You know, he comes from Somerville, South Carolina, Somerville High School. They have a fantastic baseball program. They know winning. He's a competitor. He's a winner. I would put it that way. He's a competitor. He's a winner. And again, he's somebody that, you know, I think certainly there's things to work out like any young pitcher, like I said, but I expect Danny Lloyd to have massive success at the level with the Orioles or whatever professional club it may be with.
Well, Orioles GM Mike Elias has shown that he has loved to take SEC players in his three drafts that he has overseen so far. And Danny Lloyd was just another guy that fits that mold in the 14th round, and the O's are happy to have him in the system. And Chris, thank you so much for joining us and giving us all the details we need to know about one of the Orioles' newest right-handed pitchers.
Connor, appreciate you having me, man. It was a pleasure.
So we'll get back to the Orioles talk in just a second, but does this sound familiar? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows. You're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friend log in for the good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all that entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes and no need to buy another device ever again. And the best part, there is no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible with device required. Content varies by package. And today's episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast is also brought to you by RockAuto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to RockAuto.com at home and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. And the best part of RockAuto.com, the prices are reliably low for every single customer. And trust me, it's easy to use as well. I know nothing about cars, but I can navigate this website and find what I need with ease. And they have everything you could need, from brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. So go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And write Locked On Orioles in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. So our thanks again to Chris Phillips, the host of the Spurs Up Show, great podcast that covers all things South Carolina Gamecocks athletics, for joining us here on the pod to talk about Daniel Lloyd. Again, the 14th round selection by the Orioles in this year's draft, the right-handed reliever out of South Carolina, 6'3", and a good chat with Chris, who, you know, does cover that South Carolina baseball team pretty closely, of course, was a baseball player himself, as he talked about. And, you know, it was a good South Carolina team, and Lloyd was a big part of it. But again, it was interesting to talk about, you know, how he was just another guy who was not the main closer for his team, but the Orioles were still interested in him, even though he was, you know, just a college relief arm. But, you know, the stats don't lie: a 3.07 ERA, 41 innings, 42 strikeouts, just 29 hits allowed, 16 walks, and no home runs allowed by Daniel Lloyd since he became a reliever in 2020 in his South Carolina career. That's pretty good stuff, and that is stuff that the Orioles are going to like as well. Now, it hasn't gone great for Lloyd so far in his pro career with the Orioles, but it's only been 3 appearances. Now, he did not pitch at all at the FCL. He went right to low A Delmarva and has been working out of the Shorebirds bullpen. 3 appearances for him out of the Shorebirds pen, 2 2/3 innings. Now, he's only allowed 1 hit, but he has allowed 3 earned runs. He's walked 6 batters, struck out just 1, and has allowed his first home run on the diamond since 2019. That has allotted for a lot of those 3 runs. But the 6 walks to the 1 strikeout in 2 2/3, obviously an issue. He's honestly done a good job of kind of working out of some bigger jams, and, you know, things could be worse in terms of the earned runs for Lloyd right now in his young Delmarva career. But again, you're not going to judge a guy who's had so much success in college off of 3 low A minor league appearances in his first time pitching in professional baseball. And again, you know, to take a pure reliever who was not a closer as your 14th round selection, the Orioles definitely see a lot here in Lloyd, who just turned 21. So he is, you know, a little bit younger than some of the other college players as well. So excited to see him move up. You know, he'll finish this year at Delmarva out of the bullpen and hopefully have some better appearances as the year goes on for the Shorebirds. But, you know, we will continue to talk about the Orioles draft picks throughout this week as we are winding down. You know, we're getting close to the end of the series here, talking about all 25 of the guys, the 21 draft picks, and the 4 undrafted free agents as well. But in terms of the major league level, the Orioles do have another game tonight at the Rogers Center. Final game of August for the Orioles as they will take on the Blue Jays tonight in game 2 of a 3-game series. Keegan Aiken is back to the mound for the Orioles after just surprising everybody in the baseball world that last time out. This will be his 20th appearance in the big league season. He has a 7.26 ERA in 70 2/3 innings so far this year. But again, that last start against the Angels on the 26th of August, 7 innings, 1 run, 3 hits, 6 Ks, and 2 walks for Keegan Aiken going 7 innings. We honestly, we couldn't believe it, to be honest, but he will get the start again tonight, and it will be his first appearance against the Toronto Blue Jays here so far this season. He will go up against the veteran lefty Hyunjin Ryu, who will make his 26th start for the Blue Jays this season. Ryu has a 3.88 ERA on the season, 115 strikeouts, and 143 and two-thirds innings of work. His last start came on the 26th against the White Sox, and it was one of the worst starts of the season for Ryu. 3 2/3 innings pitched. He allowed 7 runs on 7 hits, struck out 4, and walked 1. He is trying to turn things around after a disastrous start. That one was against, albeit a very good, White Sox offense. Now, Ryu, on the flip side of Aiken, has already made 3 starts against the Orioles this year. And, you know, overall, he has been pretty good against the Birds this season. June 20th in Baltimore, he went 7 innings, allowing 1 run on just 3 hits. June 26th in Buffalo, 6 2/3. Now, the Orioles did get him for 4 runs on 7 hits in that one. And then the last one of the 3 was July 7th back in Baltimore, 5 innings, 1 run, 5 hits, and 7 Ks for Ryu. So generally, he's had success against the Orioles. But the O's, again, have hit lefties better than righties all year. And we'll see if the Orioles can potentially get to Ryu in tonight's game. Then on tomorrow's episode, we'll be back with you here on the pod. We will, of course, recap game 2 of the 3-game set in Toronto between the Orioles and the Blue Jays. And then we will continue looking at the Orioles draft picks. Tomorrow, we get to the 17th rounder. That is the right-handed pitcher, Peter Van Loon, who the Orioles took out of UC Irvine. He was the ace of the Anteaters staff this season, a team that won their conference and made it to the NCAA tournament, had a good run in the Stanford Regional as well, and Van Loon was a big part of that. And we are going to talk to his head coach at UC Irvine. Ben Orloff is going to join us, who leads that Irvine program, and he's going to talk about Van Loon, his career at UC Irvine, how he recruited him from the JUCO ranks to get 2 incredible seasons out of him, and kind of his stuff on the mound, how he projects as a pitcher, and what he thinks he can do at the next level with the Orioles. So that is all coming up on tomorrow's episode. Before we go, though, we do have to tell you about another podcast here on the network, and that is Locked On Bets. And betting on baseball, you know, it doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast, hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling, get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favored picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Follow the Locked On Bets podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get your pods. But back here on Locked On Orioles, we're hoping you're liking what you're hearing, and we will continue to focus on the O's and get through the last part of these draft pick breakdowns for the Orioles as all these new guys come into the system. But if you're liking what you're hearing, make sure to give us a rating and a review on whatever platform you listen to the podcast, specifically on Apple Podcasts, if that's where you are listening. They make it very easy to give the rating and to write a short review. If you could take just a little bit of time there, you know, it doesn't have to be very long, just a quick little review. That really helps me out, helps the pod out, helps us get you this Orioles content every single day. Only podcast out there bringing you Orioles content 5 days a week. And you know what that means? That means we will be back right here on the pod tomorrow. But until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.